He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
I'm not hearing anything. And welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show, Best Inverse Funds Now show. It's definitely the stocks leading the day. Today, this is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst, and look what we've got going here so far. Here we go again.
Right, yeah,
deja here we go again. Another big rally in the market. It is beginning to fade, and that's all I can say is all the previous rallies in the market. Where have all the rallies gone, right? You know, they disappeared into the woodwork somewhere. And I could just say that I've looked at about, 250, 300 stocks so far. And I'm seeing just, it may be a big bounce in the indexes, but when I look underneath at the individual stocks, it's pretty anemic. The Dow is up 476, however. The S&P is up 88, seeing a big rally in the tech, which is always suspicious, smacks of short covering to me because that's been the most heavily shorted area of the market. The NASDAQ's up 333 to 10,654. Oil's up $1.03, 86.64. Gold's up $22. The 10-year's down 7 basis points. And Bitcoin is up 453. And I think it's all about the UK right now and their U-turn on any kind of tax cuts. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Which will it be this week? This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And I would just say, Barry, you know, after I did the newsletter on over the weekend, sent it out Saturday, earnings reports, a little summary there, how we were going so far this year, earnings forecast for the next couple of years. I'm worried more about peak earnings than I am peak inflation. And, you know, that's kind of the excuse they gave for the big almost 1,000-point gain in the Dow last Thursday, and then we gave back half of it on Friday. Because a lot of folks, investors, are looking for that peak inflation number, okay, and that pivot by the Fed. But you know what? I think they're watching the wrong thing. I think you should be watching the earnings estimates and these coming earnings reports by individual companies that make up the S&P 500. And what I've witnessed is very similar to 2007. 2007 was the year leading up to the 08-09 financial crisis, where we saw the S&P sell off 53%. Well, we're not down that much yet in the S&P 500. We're down about half of that, however, and that's all come from multiple contraction. And I don't think you're going to see the multiples contract anymore. But what I'm starting to see more and more of is a slide downwards of earnings expectations. For instance, a few months ago, or maybe 6 weeks ago, somewhere in there, looking at this quarter that's now being reported, the expectations were for almost 10% growth in earnings versus the same quarter last year. You know where we're at right now? 1.6%. So the earnings expectations for this quarter, and we have not really had that many reports so far, just a very small sampling. But that small sampling has been enough to lower the expectations to just 1.6%. It wouldn't take much, Barry, for those earnings estimates to go negative, the growth in earnings to go negative versus the same time last year. You think Certainly. I'm on the right track there? It's more about earnings than it is about inflation here.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked, a handful of weeks ago in terms of, just seeing more and more reports, right, of earnings expectations or analyst expectations going down. We haven't seen a ton of it necessarily from, we've seen a few, a few notes from CEOs, lowering those, but most of those, downward expectations were from analysts, and it was almost kind of, kind of like the high jump, but backwards, right? Whenever you get the high jump or pole vaulting, you're always moving the pole upwards. In this case,
you hope.
We were going the other way, right?
Yeah.
And it was, it's like, okay, eventually we'll just be able to hop over the stick. And at 1.6 or 1.8% earnings growth, I mean, you're on the cusp of, potentially going negative in that instance. So much easier to predict, in my opinion, than what inflation is doing at this particular moment in time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's and the market seems to be hyper focused on peak inflation, peak interest rate hikes. I don't think just because the Fed starts to finally level off their rate hikes, the damage has been done. Okay. They've left a lot of collateral damage in their wake of these 75 basis point hikes, and I don't think that them leveling off all of a sudden and saying, okay, we're going to back off of these rate hikes. Maybe we only need 25 basis point hikes going forward, but the damage to the real estate market, the damage to tech, the damage to the consumer market, it's already out there, and you're not going to recover just because interest rates are now remaining the same.
Well, yeah, that's it.
As opposed to rising.
Right. I mean, they're going to, it's a whole different scenario, assuming that they're going to begin to, pull back, make interest rate cuts. At worst, right, you're going to be, likely stable for a period of time. And so, in that scenario, your mortgage rates are still going to be high. All the what people should pay for earnings are going to be low, because the fact that you're going to have a Fed funds rate at that point probably around 4.25, 4.5, even if they stop after the next hike, right?
Yeah. Well, we were using multiples of 20 to 21, somewhere in there on S&P 500 earnings. I mean, we're down around 15, 16, 17, which is normal. That's average over the years. And at the same time, we may have leveled off with that, with the multiple. But now you got to be worried about the other big part of the equation. The elephant in the room is the earnings that the companies produce. How much of an impact have these rising interest rates had? We're going to find out. We've had a few banks report so far. But I've seen in the past week, I've seen the earnings expectations for this year, next year, and the year after that sliding backwards. Now, why do I bring up 2007? Because that's what I witnessed in 2007. I witnessed peak earnings and earnings expectations starting to fall. And that was the big warning flag, the red warning flag, not yellow, the red warning flag. We were in for trouble in 08 and 09. And then finally, those earnings expectations started to bottom out, the cuts to expectations early in 2009. They started to look up finally, and that was the sign that we had finally turned the corner and we're going to start building and growing earnings once again in the U.S. So a falling earnings environment, a falling earnings expectation environment, is not a very good one to be investing into. And I think there's a lot of this, today I just think the pound and the bonds in the UK and them going up back on all of their tax cut plans, that's good for a day or two of rallies. But I don't think that's a big driving factor. I think it comes more down to U.S. earnings. I think that's the key here that we got to be watching. Okay, so we've got a company out there, Oppenheimer, that's had the biggest target price on the S&P 500. As of last week, their target price for this year, okay, what do we have left in the year? We got all of November, all of December. We've got 2.5 months. That's it. And their target price for the S&P was at 4,800. Well, we're at 3,600. You'd have to have one heck of a rally. You'd have to have a 33% rally to get to Oppenheimer's target price. Well, I think they realized that last week, and their equity strategist John Stoltz has cut his target price for 2022 from 4,800 to 4,000. Okay, you know what? That's just evidence of how off they were. When you've got to start making cuts to your target price like that, and I equate that to how far off the Fed was. When you've got to do all these 75 bases, you really miscalculate big time. And Oppenheimer has now lowered their target price to 4,000. So look, we're at 3,600, 3,700 right now. They see 10 to 12% upside potential. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Well, we've had a lot of rallies in the market here recently. Last week, obviously, on Thursday, we had almost a 1,000-point rally in the Dow, which was pretty much unexplainable. We really don't know what went on, what caused it, because, you know, you had that CPI report come in hotter than expected. Market goes down 500 points after that report came in, and then by the end of the day was almost up 1,000. And I guess looking back, watching for peak inflation. Okay, this is peak inflation right here. It's time to buy the market. Then if you go back 2 weeks ago, on a Monday and a Tuesday, we had a couple of 400, 500-point days. That's all I can say is everyone in the past has been sold off. As will this one be different? The odds are against that. I mean, the probabilities of this one being different and this one actually being the bottom of the market and now we start climbing from here, you know, the odds aren't real good of that. Well, Morgan Stanley agrees with me in some areas and not in others. Well, they agree that what began last Thursday, they say, is a bear market rally. You know, meaning as the primary trend of the market has been down now for quite some time, well, you're going to get these secondary uptrends along this primary trend that are bear market rallies. They're rallies during a downtrend in the market. They're not trend reversals. We want to see the market put in a bottom. We want to see a constructive bottom made in the market. Very seldom do you see V-shaped bottoms. We did in the COVID year, but that was very unusual. And then you want to start to see earnings expectations rising, interest rates, companies guiding higher, interest rates remaining firm. And you want to start to see upwards movement in some of these leadership stocks like Microsoft and Apple. AMD, et cetera. And we're not even close to seeing that at this point in time. So anyways, Morgan Stanley says that the lows are in for this current downtrend. They're not saying the lows are in for this current primary trend. And they think that the market, the S&P is going to go back above 4,000 just on a bear market rally. And then they see the bear market resuming. And they don't think it will play out. This is Morgan Stanley. And I have to, I have to say that Morgan Stanley's been one of the more bearish firms out there. They think the final price lows for this bear that we're in are likely to be closer to 3,000 to 3,200. And that's pretty much where I'm at. Just as I look at the technical analysis, Barry, you know, you look at the NASDAQ, you get below 9,600. There's really no support until you get back down to 7,000 area. So, hey, I hope the market can put in a nice solid bottom. I hope that earnings have bottomed. earnings downgrades have bottomed, and now we start seeing earnings upgrades, but I just don't see that at the current time yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if today's also kind of, I know we mentioned the UK, but if today's kind of a bad news is good news for the market scenario, but I don't know if you caught the New York the business conditions index,
no.
So the Empire survey, and it fell 7.6 points, so it's actually negative 9.1 for October. It was supposed to come in at negative 5, and so anything under 0 is obviously deteriorating conditions. One important note, I think, was firms do not expect conditions to improve over the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And prices paid, the prices paid index, so this is how much this ties back to the PPI, but prices paid index rose 9 points to 48.6 after a sharp decline over the past 3 months. So they had we had 3 months of, you know, so quote unquote declining prices, right? And now in this instance, you've got those ticking back up again, which is kind of what we saw in the PPI. And we all know that, you know, those prices are going to get, or companies are going to do their best to pass those prices on to us.
Absolutely. So. Well, there is one other promising thing out there. We do have two pretty fairly big earnings reports today, both of them banks, and both of them came in better than expected. And you've got Bank of America up 5.6% today. I think it's still a member of the Dow, Bank of America. And also, you know, they own Merrill Lynch. Bank of America's up 5.6 on 4x normal volume. So that's a good start to the earnings week. That's also, I'm sure, helping this. And then Bank of New York Mellon, BK, is also up 5.9% today on better than expected. It's mostly the revenues that they brought in. The earnings didn't quite, measure up, but it was the revenue. And so that's also helping today's. I haven't looked at the earnings calendar yet for this week. Usually this is a moderate kind of week. This is kind of the second, third week of earnings season. Next week will be hellacious. And by the end of next week, we're going to have a really good idea of where we're at. I mean, we're all looking ahead. We already know what this year's going to come in, you know, somewhere in the $208 per share area, which will be record earnings for the S&P 500. You go back to 2009, we were at $60 per share in earnings. Look at how the earnings have grown during a friendly Fed, low interest rate environment. We've gone from $60 in 2009 to $208 in this year that's about to end in 2.5 months. What will next year bring? Can we, you know, just if you factor in 7-8% growth, you're looking at about 220, 225 in earnings next year. Those are the expectations. But I'm seeing those expectations get whittled away every single week as I do my macro outlook on the market. And, you know, we get a few weeks of earnings in here under our belt, we're going to have a real good idea about next year and 2024, which we're already looking at. There's a little few deals taking place today. Harold Hamm, the Hamm family, is going to buy Continental Resources for $74 and take it private. He signaled that he wanted to do that. And I thought, you know, that puts in a bottom under Continental Resources. But Continental has really not done much here recently. We got stopped out of it recently on a really bad day in the market about a month ago. And so, you know, it is up 8.5% today, on a deal to take Continental private. That's pretty good when your family can step up to the plate, $27 billion.
Yeah. And
I remember they made a big deal. I've had Harold Hamm on my show. I hear the music this time. I just remember when he got a divorce, he wrote his wife $1 billion. They had a picture of the $1 billion check.
Wow.
Where do you cash that? At a little liquor store downtown? I don't know. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Definitely the inverse funds have done a whole lot better here in 2021 than they have than the long funds. In fact, in the newsletter, on the opening article of the newsletter on Saturday, I first showed a chart of the S&P 500, which doesn't look too happy as it continues to break support and carve out 52-week lows. And then underneath that, I showed a 52-week or a one-year chart of SH, which is exactly the mirror opposite inverse of the S&P 500. It looks a lot happier. A lot more cheerful chart than the S&P 500 does. You know, another thing you have at work here, just from a technical analysis point of view, there's a phenomenon called, overhead resistance, where, you know, you got a lot of people that have lost a lot of money in the AMDs of the world and the NVIDIAs of the world, and even Apple and Amazon and different of these big leadership stocks, that puts over an overhang of selling. You know, you get a good rally, and it's like, oh, God, I'm going to use this opportunity to get out of this stock. You've got to exhaust all of that overhead supply of people that want out, but they're waiting for a better price. You get a better price, you get an up day in the market, and then that wave of selling comes through the market. And, you know, that's another part of finally reaching a bottom, is you have to have all of that overhead supply kind of exhausted, all right? All the sellers, everybody who wanted to just get out, they're out. Now, you know, all of the people that the weak hands, they call that, but now we're getting even more into the longer term investors that want out, and they see rallies like today, and you know, they use that opportunity to get out at a better price than it was on Friday, and that continues to happen as these rallies come along. You exhaust more of that overhead supply. And the money on the sidelines in money market funds and cash continues to grow. And then finally, maybe we turn the corner on the Fed. We turn the corner on the companies that are warning, the companies that are lowering their guidance. And then that money starts coming back into the markets, starts trickling back into the markets. And I just don't think we've anywhere near the point of exhausting that overhead supply. And I'm looking at individual charts. I'm now through about 500 or so. And I'm seeing anemic rallies in the individual stocks. So I hate to burst anybody's bubble on a Monday thinking we've bottomed, it's time to go all in. I don't think this is it yet. Hold tight, okay, for now. All right, now. We've got a lot of news in the energy patch. You know, a company we used to own, and we liked it because they make renewable diesel fuel, LFG. I found that stock, you know, using obviously the Best Stocks Now app. And then it started to sell off and kind of turned the corner, and I had a line in the sand, and eventually we lost the stock to a sell stop. I see today that BP is stepping up to the plate and buying Archaea Energy. So you know what? The oil companies, not only are they buying into, they're buying solar, they're becoming players in solar. They're becoming players in the recharge, charging the electric vehicles. I mean, if you've already got, how many gas stations does BP have, you know, across the world? They're a natural to be building and doing their own charging stations. Well, now they're buying Archaea Energy, which is a bioenergy company. They make diesel fuel from, you know, organic waste. That stock is up 53% today, in a big move. You know, and there's others out there like that. There's a couple of companies that are making renewable jet fuel. Okay, and I think there's going to continue to be deals like that made with these fossil fuel companies trying to green themselves and stay relevant. Okay, let's see. We've got France's. I'm just saying. I'm just an observer. I read the news every day. I spend several hours. I have never seen so many workers' strikes around the world, and it makes me think there's some instigators out there. But here you've got France and Europe that is just desperate for energy. Okay, desperate. So France is going to restart. Their plan is to restart 6 nuclear reactors. Well, all the workers go on strike, okay, to block, or they want more money or whatever. So now they've got a problem. They're going to have to postpone the restart. You know, we're getting into winter here, Barry. I saw this Thursday, we're down to 41 degrees.
Yeah, in the mornings it's been, it gets hot, pretty quick in the day. But, yeah, we've had some crisp mornings, some crisp evenings. And, France is the largest exporter of power in the world, I believe, in terms of nuclear power. And so, they might have enough. I don't know. Those 6 reactors, right? I don't know. They probably have enough for themselves, but they export that power to their neighbors. So, it's Germany, potentially Spain, right? Belgium, some of those places which would end up with some of that excess nuclear power. In this case, it looks like it's either going to be delayed or never happen.
Yeah, the strike action is blocking maintenance work and repairs at the reactors. So, that's pretty selfish, in my opinion.
Repairs seem pretty...
to be looking out for yourselves, and you want another dollar an hour while, the whole continent of Europe is freezing to death. I was giving my 2 of my granddaughters painting lessons on Saturday. Oil. I'm transitioning. They were so excited. Those little tubes of oil paints and those beautiful colors coming out there. And we were talking about Vincent van Gogh. And they've been taught a little bit about Van Gogh and Picasso and whatnot. And here at the Louvre, did you see that last week?
Oh, yeah, no, was that British Museum or was it at the Louvre? Yeah,
maybe.
Through the can of soup, yeah, which is kind of...
They're wearing shirts that say, "Stop oil now." Why would you pick on one of the most wildflowers by Van Gogh, a masterpiece painting, and trying to deface it? Luckily, it was tomato soup. It wasn't red paint.
Yeah, and it's thankfully behind glass and protected. But when you look at it, it just seemed if you're going to protest, it seems like you could figure out a different way to do it. You're trying to preserve nature or whatever
your
take is, and then you're going to throw some soup on a masterpiece, right?
It's just and these are just little snotty 15-year-old girls maybe or something that think they know better how the world should be. Okay, here's another thing I saw when I was doing the newsletter on Friday that shocked me: the yield curve. I couldn't believe it. 53 points. That's a 2-decade record. The inversion is 53 points right now. The bond market thinks there's going to be a big recession, not a little recession, a big recession out there. I can't believe that the 2-year got up to 4.4 while the 10-year was at 3.8. 53 basis points. Dating back to 2000, there's been 2 yield curve inversions that stood out. One was in 2007, which foretold the 53% sell-off and the Great Recession of 08 and 09. The other big yield curve inversion, these were both the bear markets that I witnessed, foretold the two that was in 2000. It foretold the 2001 through 2003 market. So you know what? Maybe the yield curve is wrong this time, but it predicted the 01-02 massive sell-off in the NASDAQ of 79% and the 53% sell-off in 2008-2009. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I'm looking for some quality here in what is still an up day, especially in the NASDAQ, up 314. You know what? I just see all the similarities of the previous big rallies in the market. When I see stocks like Chewy, up 8.3%, which is a dog food, online dog food company, and other things besides dog food, you know, treats, milk bones, stuff like that. Carvana, you know, not exactly a leadership stock in the market. Carvana, what did Chewy and Carvana have in common? Heavily shorted stocks, heavily shorted. And I think there's just enough news out there to spook the short sellers. You know, so you have a couple of factions at work here today. You have the short sellers scrambling, so they don't get hurt too bad by this up day in the market, because an up day is a down day for the short sellers. And then you've got on the other side of the coin, you've got folks that are using this rally to unload stocks. Maybe they haven't unloaded yet. There's still a lot of that out there, people wanting to sell and waiting for up days to unload. That's called overhead to supply. I think there's a lot of that out there. Some other leaders today, Wayfair, which has never made any money, a big online website company that was $370. Now it's $32. So you're going to put your faith in Wayfair that you know, this is the signal that the market has bottomed and is turning the corner to the upside. How about Mercado Libre, which is basically the Amazon of Latin America? It's up 10.6. All of this smacks of short covering. Coinbase, which, you know, is a big digital coin brokerage firm, up 9.3%, heavily, heavily shorted stock. If you looked up the short interest, you can look up that on a daily basis. You can pull up a list of the most heavily, it's by percent of the shares outstanding. Sometimes you'll find stocks that have huge, huge short positions. The classic was not Bed Bath and Beyond. What was it, Barry? The one that broke the back of a lot of the
GameStop. Yeah, GameStop. Yeah, very similar to the Bed Bath and Beyond phenomenon.
Yes, but, where there was so much short interest that this little gang on Reddit got together, and with their buying was enough to drive the stock to dizzying heights. And wiping out many short sellers along the way. I mean, about all they can do, they don't have enough firepower, you know, to wipe out 10 stock, but they can pick on one stock and try to move it the other way. And, you know, there was a lot of money made on the way up, too, in GameStop. If you were on the right side of that, you had to just believe that the buying would continue. It had nothing to do with the fundamentals of GameStop, which is a garbage company. It, you know, in this day and age with everything being streaming and whatnot, who's going to go in and rent a game at a mall? It's almost like a Blockbuster type of model still. They're trying to.
Well, my kids download them to the actual Xbox now anyway. So,
yeah.
You know, we don't even really have the, you know, you can get the disc if you want to, but you know, you don't have to have the disc. It just downloads to the machine.
Now, speaking of short interest, how much short interest was there in the San Diego Padres beating the Los Angeles Dodgers?
Hey, I mean, talk about a rally that held, right?
I should have taken that bet. I could have made. I really felt like they were going to beat the Dodgers because, I don't know, the Padres just somehow their mindset was, you know, we can beat this. Even though it's Goliath in our stadium.
And those five-game series, I mean, those five-game series,
yeah,
anything can really happen versus you know, playing it out over seven. So it's it came out in your favor. I was surprised. We waited till the last segment to bring it up. So I didn't know if it was, you know, when someone's pitching a no hitter or a perfect game where nobody talks to the pitcher in the dugout.
So
I didn't want to bring it up. So I wasn't bringing it up until you did.
I think, you know, Dave Roberts, why he pulled his starter, he was pitching in the fifth inning, a 1-2 hit shutout. That made no sense to go out there and grab the starter and go to relief pitchers to finish the game. But it is what it is. That led to a big 5-run inning. We looked up our tickets, our old season tickets in San Diego, where we had season tickets for several years in a couple of different spots, actually. But for a game, the game being played tomorrow, Tuesday, yeah, they're $1,000 each.
Right. Yeah, wow.
That's I don't know if I could enjoy that game knowing that I paid $1,000, that I used to pay $89 for.
Feels like even if you won, you lose, you know.
Yeah. What? We did think about it, you know. She looked into overnight plane tickets were sky high, you know. And now we're looking at Philadelphia,
baby. I was about to say, yeah, you get a good chance at it in Philadelphia.
But you need a bulletproof vest in Philadelphia these days.
Riot
what I
gear.
Hear.
You get riot gear if you're going to go. If you're going to wear Padres.
Oh, I would. Wouldn't wear Padre, no. I'd wear a Phillies hat and a Philly shirt.
Wear an Eagles jersey. That's a,
yes.
You can get away with that.
Okay, they're okay. Well. That's a good idea. The Eagles. Okay, here is another one. Okay, now here's three that I want to mention real quickly. Renewable fuel stocks. Oh, there's a deal. What are the other renewable fuel stocks? Well, how about Montauk Renewables? It's in the name. They make renewable. Energy. Guess where they're located? Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's an omen. MNTK is up 18% today because of the big move by BP to buy out Archaea Energy today. Will the others? I mean, will Shell buy out a renewable energy company? Will Chevron? I don't know. But Montauk. And then the other one that you can take note of is Opal. I've been kind of watching that one. That was a SPAC. Opal provides and distributes renewable natural gas for the heavy-duty truck markets worldwide. What's the symbol, they say? What's the symbol? Opal, O-P-A-L, and Montauk is M-N-T-K. There you go. Did we give you enough for the day? Okay, we check out last week's newsletter. Watch the macro outlook. That's the key. It's going to come down to earnings, earnings, earnings. This is Bill Gundersen. You can also call us for a portfolio review. We've had a lot of those lately. 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gundersen or clients of Gundersen Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gundersen Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.